It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
He's not from Pennsylvania. I guess he was born here, but he left you, folks. He left you for another state. This guy talks about, oh, I know Scranton. I know that. Well, I know the place is better. He left you for another state, and he didn't take care of you because he didn't take care of your jobs.
The unemployment rate in Pennsylvania has just reached an all-time historic low. In Pennsylvania, we've added 155,000 new jobs, including 20,000 new construction jobs. Nobody thought that was possible. When you have the best economy probably that we've ever had, I don't know, how do you lose this election, right? Do we want keep America great or make America great again? Make America great again. So now we go, ready? Keep America great. Well, I like it because we'll sell many, many more hats that way. We'll keep the hat the same color, though, right?
That was President Donald Trump having fun in Pennsylvania last night with enthusiastic crowds. And, of course, Pennsylvania has improved their economic situation since President Trump came to office. They gave him the state by a margin in 2020 and so or 2016. And so he went there to try to keep that state. That's what that was all about. And he was hitting Joe Biden pretty hard, as well he should. You know, I have to tell you, I think at some point, sooner rather than later, Joe Biden is going to implode because he's packaged. And if you actually hear him go on and on, he's very smooth, but he also says really, really ridiculous things. I'll give you an idea. He was doing an interview with someone who was very interested in the climate change issue and claimed, he said, it got caught on camera. By the way, I want you to know, I'm the guy that did all this stuff. Read Real Clear Politics. It will tell you about how I started this whole thing back in 1987 with climate change. And so, of course, he could say what he will, but Al Gore, of course, introduced a resolution back in 1976 on climate change. I think Al Gore, of course, is the guru of climate change and global warming, but Joe Biden now says that he isn't. Actually, this is really not funny, but I can't hardly help but laugh. I saw a video that came into my inbox last night about, it was Biden at some rally, and the crowds are roaring, the music, some kind of pop music is playing, and he has his sunglasses. He comes up on stage, mid-stage, right at the center, and he embraces a woman. You can only see her from the back. But he gives her this big, huge embrace and keeps holding on to her, moves his hands down the middle of his back and the middle of her back. Now, you're looking at her back and him. The crowd is behind him. So you're the camera's from the back of the stage, and this is outdoors. So he's embracing this woman, so you see his hands and you see her back, and then you see her take both of her hands and remove his hands from her waist. She actually removes them, like, let me go, and then moves away from him. It's really amazing. I mean, this just happened, and of course, it's plays right into the narrative of who we know Joe Biden to be for whatever it is, and to the extent that it goes, I can't state, but it's very, very uncomfortable for women to be around Joe Biden, at least many of them. They don't like to be touched and hugged and nuzzled the way he does on a regular basis. I have a problem with that, as you know, so... there it is. That's Joe Biden. And that was the president in Joe Biden's home state just last night. I don't know if he said this, but, you know, Joe Biden always talks about, I'm a Scranton guy. I know, a hard scrabble. I grew up in Scranton. And he left Scranton when he was 10 years old. You know, and I think Joe Biden entered politics when he was like 21, 22. He's never been anywhere else. He's been living off the public paycheck his entire life and done very well, I might add. And so hardscrabble is a little bit probably not the case with Joe Biden, and yet he is number one in the Democratic polls for candidates for president. Well, speaking of the president, you probably know by now that Justin Amash, who is a congressman from Michigan, a Grand Rapids area, made a statement that he thought that President Trump, according to the Mueller report, had committed impeachable offenses. Well, a lot of blowback from that, a lot of conversation, a lot of commentary. The Freedom Caucus, who Justin is part of, issued a total condemnation. And in fact, Jim Jordan said he asked Justin, what are you doing? And so he said it was every single person who totally disagrees with what he says. That was Jordan, who described the discussion inside the Freedom Caucus. Now, the problem for a lot of people on Justin Amash on this is that Justin was elected as a libertarian. He was a Ron Paul candidate, was supported by him, meaning, you know, libertarian, I'm sure that you understand at least in part what that's about, that they don't take stands on social issues. And Justin Amash, from every description, likes to be a real maverick, kind of like John McCain. He sort of relishes being on the opposite side of whatever the forces are. He's got a pretty decent voting record, but he loves to grandstand. Some people say he's a huge ego, and he loves that it's all about Justin. Someone has said that about John McCain as well. I think that was true, actually, of John. Justin, I don't know as well, but people who do know him tell me that he really does most things for himself. But here's a very troubling piece of this puzzle. There was a report just yesterday that Justin Amash actually has holdings and investments in China. And the implication is that the reason Justin Amash now is like really stepping out boldly to criticize President Trump and to try to maybe do something about his presidency is what's happening with China. So I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know it's true that he has holdings in China. I just don't know who knows what his motives are. But you have to wonder. It doesn't make sense. And for a libertarian who is notably, as you can see from Rand Paul, who's gone to the mat over civil liberties, Justin Amash allegedly embraces that. For him to think that it's okay for President Trump or any presidential candidate to have been the target of out-of-control intelligence agencies using every device known to man to try to topple his candidacy and then his presidency is very, very troubling. And so that's Justin Amash. He has, by the way, a challenger who's thrown his hat into the ring. I don't know how good the challenger is, so I'll reserve that for another day, but I'm just telling you that's what's happening with Justin Amash. Meanwhile, of course, things with Iran are heating up. Rich Edson on Fox last night had something to say about this. Let's listen.
I would say to the Iranians, do not underestimate the resolve on the U.S. side.
A resolve President Trump stressed, tweeting, quote, "If Iran wants to fight, that will be the official end of Iran. Never threaten the United States again." This weekend, the USS Abraham Lincoln Strike Group conducted exercises in the Persian Gulf, part of the U.S. military expansion in the region. This is on top of what the administration calls its maximum pressure campaign, strong economic and military sanctions against Iran.
You cannot let Iran have nuclear weapons.
Yesterday, a rocket landed in Baghdad's Green Zone, home to the massive U.S. embassy. A senior State Department official says the rocket missed buildings with Americans in them, and no group has claimed responsibility. Though the official says, quote, "We will hold Iran responsible if any such attacks are conducted by its proxy militia forces or elements of such forces, and will respond to Iran accordingly." The Associated Press reports Iraqi officials believe the rocket was launched from East Baghdad, home to Iran-backed Shiite militias. In Iran, officials there announced they've quadrupled production of low-enriched uranium, putting Iran on track to violate levels set in the Iran nuclear deal. Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif says President Trump's adversaries are goading him into a fight with Iran and that economic terrorism and genocidal taunts won't end Iran. Zarif is in Oman, a country that has acted as an intermediary between the United States and Iran.
I don't want to fight, but you do have situations like Iran. You can't let them have nuclear weapons.
A senior administration official told reporters the U.S. has reached out to Iran to negotiate and has received no response. Though the president says, quote, "This is a false report. Iran will call us if and when they are ever ready. In the meantime, their economy continues to collapse. Very sad for the Iranian people.
Yeah, so there's a lot to say about Iran. How should we feel about this? But I want to sort of give you an idea of what's happening behind the scenes. I told you yesterday that General Flynn was under surveillance. We know now from the Mueller report, he was under surveillance before they ever officially declared to us that he was being investigated for his connections to Russia. And it's interesting that that happened under the Obama administration. And remember that General Petraeus was fired as director of national intelligence by Barack Obama. He was the one person in the Obama administration who publicly went against Barack Obama's policies in the Middle East and basically called him out before Congress. And so he then, as it seems the timeline would indicate, he then came under this secret surveillance by the intelligence agencies. They hated Michael Flynn. Others have described that Michael Flynn was trying to sort of revamp the intelligence services. He knew there was something really wrong, and he was trying to do something from within. And that's why he was fired. Okay, and then he went under surveillance, and then, of course, you know the rest is history. Okay, but I want to tell you that the behind-the-scenes thing on Iran, one of the many, there are a lot of behind-the-scenes stories here, is that John Bolton is equally hated by the intelligence services and by the State Department. I can tell you that John, you know, he only had a very short tenure as the ambassador, U.S. ambassador in the U.N. because he was so undermined. They hate him. John is a principled man who understands that it takes strength to win battles with North Korea, with Iran. He understands that, but he is like anathema to the intelligence agencies and to the State Department. And so there's a great effort, really, to tank him in the eyes of the president. You notice the Iranians call it the B team. That's the Bolton team. They call him the mustache. And, of course, our own news stories continually, you know, accuse John Bolton of the one who's trying to ramp up this situation with Iran, and that it's sort of presented as though he is usurping the president because that goads the president and they want to get rid of him. So that's the background on this. So I found it interesting that there was an interview on with David Petraeus, who was the Pentagon, in charge of the Pentagon under the President Obama. And he was on CNN and did this interview, ABC, actually, ABC. And just listen to the questions and listen to his response. It's pretty surprising. Let's listen.
I think that has been answered by the president, frankly. It's pretty clear that he doesn't want to go to war with Iran. He's not after regime change. He's after what Secretary Pompeo has announced as the objective, which is regime behavior change.
And John Bolton, obviously, before he was national security advisor, talked about regime change and that that was something he wanted. Do you think that's still being whispered in the president's ear?
Not after what the president said to the press the other day, certainly, if it was ever said. Again, keep in mind the setting for in which John gave that speech was a bunch of Iranian dissidents, essentially. Doesn't mean that he doesn't desire that, doesn't mean that perhaps many folks would like to see that. Of course, we have, should have learned by now, I think, especially after the Arab Spring, that the regime change aftermath is not always what we have hoped it would be.
You've seen the reports about war planning, and certainly you go on both ends when you do war planning, I would say, that 120,000.
Let me just abbreviate that. That was Martha Raddatz, and she's asking him, don't you think that was overkill? Talking about sending 120,000 troops, and Petraeus jumps in and says, no, absolutely not. You'd be derelict in your duties if you didn't plan ahead. We have to plan for all those eventual possibilities. I did the same thing when I was serving. So it really was an absolute blunt blow to some notion that John Bolton was out of the line of normalcy in his regard for Iran, and the president was not getting good advice, because that's what they want the narrative to be, because they want to get rid of John Bolton. By the way, Iran is the world's leading executor of children under 18 since 1990. It's number two in the world in overall executions. It's horrible stories, which we'll get into at some other point. Steve Moore, when we return on China. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. And when it comes to healthcare sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment each day to pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for James F. Riley, Director of the United States Geological Survey. His organization studies the United States, its natural resources, and the natural hazards that threaten it. Isaiah 55:12 reminds us that the earth is indeed God's creation. You will go out in joy and be led forth in peace. The mountains and hills will burst into song before you, and all of the trees of the field will clap their hands. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask you to bless James F. Riley as he leads the U.S. Geological Survey. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Mayor Pete's not-so-neighborly town hall. That story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I've realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Pete Buttigieg portrays himself as a folksy, aw shucks small town mayor. But during the Fox News town hall, we got to see Mayor Pete for who he really is, a radical leftist who supports late term abortions and wants to erase our founding fathers. Mayor Pete also took some cheap shots at my colleagues, Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham, taking advantage of the goodwill and massive platform we have here at Fox News. We gave that guy something he never got at CNN or MSNBC, an actual audience. If the guy wanted to slam Tucker or Laura, he should man up and do it on their TV shows, face to face. But no, he took the coward's way out. I invited Mayor Pete to come on my radio show, but he refused. And I suspect I know why. I don't let people come on my show and take cheap shots at my colleagues. And had he done so, I would have tossed him right out of the studio. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
House Oversight Committee wants 10 years of the president's financial records. The White House calls that subpoena an overreach. A federal judge just disagreed. Now, this will likely continue to play itself out through the federal court system among several other fights between the White House and the democratically controlled House of Representatives.
All right, so that's what's happening. I really don't know. I've heard mixed analyses of whether the Congress can actually get the president's business records from times past. I've heard both arguments, and I really don't know what the answer is there. So we'll just have to see. It doesn't seem right, but the argument has been made that if the Congress can have the right to impeach a president and review his life like that, that they have right to ask for these records. I really don't know, but we, of course, know what's going on there. We know that they have other things in mind. And that they're not dealing in good faith. In fact, Don McGahn was supposed to go and testify this morning before one of the committees, and that's the former chief White House counsel. The president issued a long statement last night expressing that it was not appropriate. Don McGahn had testified before the Mueller Commission for 30 hours, and they had released over 1,000 documents, a million documents, as I understand it, in response to the records request by Congress. and that they felt it was just over the line for them to now require him to come and testify one more time. This is what President Trump had to say about it. This is clip 8.
Well, as I understand it, they're doing that for the Office of the Presidency for future presidents. I think it's a very important precedent. And the attorneys say that they're not doing that for me. They're doing that for the Office of the President. So we're talking about the future.
Let me be clear. If Don McGahn doesn't testify, it is time to open an impeachment inquiry.
All right. So that's what they're talking about. Don McGahn is saying, of course, he will honor the president's request. And there is precedent for the White House legal counsel not to be forced to come before Congress. You know, it does seem just common sense says, look, the Mueller report has gone on for the last 2 years. They released their huge report. They've already asked all the questions. And in McGahn's case, interviewed him for 30 hours. What is Congress doing now? Calling him back, we know what they're doing. And so who's the referee here? You know, who makes this decision? Well, I guess it's probably going to be the courts because this is a classic showdown between the executive and legislative branches. And could I add that this is actually the way it should happen. This is the way our founding fathers set it up. It's actually a very good system where there is a referee. There are three entities with equal powers. And if two side together, then the third one loses. Or if two are stand off against each other, the third one can make the decision. So it's really it's a brilliant system, but it's not sometimes painful. So we'll see what the courts decide about the president's information. By the way, just to explain this even a little bit better, Sarah Sanders issued a statement yesterday saying the House Judiciary Committee has issued a subpoena to try and force Mr. McGahn to testify again. Department of Justice has provided a legal opinion stating that, based on longstanding, bipartisan, and constitutional precedent, the former counsel to the president cannot be forced to give such testimony. And Mr. McGahn has been directed to act accordingly. This action has been taken in order to ensure that future presidents can effectively execute the responsibilities of the Office of Presidency. And, you know, it's not hard just with common sense to understand why would a man have to go through that again? Why would he have to go through that again? His testimony is a matter of record. What more can he say beyond the 30 hours? And so for right now, Don McGahn has been spared, but we don't know if that's going to last. And speaking of the House of Representatives trying to bring the president under some kind of discipline and try to have access to his financial records, you know that Elijah Cummings, who is a chairman of the, it's the Ways and Means Committee in the House. I got to check that out. Anyway, it's a powerful office. He has been trying to get President Trump's financial records. And the president actually sued him in return to block the subpoena. Now, here we're learning something really interesting this morning about Elijah Cummings. This is an article that was in the Washington Examiner. Let me share it with you. It says a charity run by the wife of Representative Elijah Cummings received millions from special interest groups and corporations that had business before her husband's committee and could have been used illegally, according to an IRS complaint filed by an ethics watchdog. Now, it even sounds worse when you get into the details. Cummings is 68. He's a Maryland Democrat. He's chairman of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. Okay, so there's the committee name. Of oversight and government reform. In that position, he actually oversees major corporations and major business interests. So he has connections with things like Johnson & Johnson, you know, all the major corporations, Google, J.P. Morgan, Prudential, they have to bring things before that committee. So here's where it gets sticky. His wife, who is named Maya Rockymore, she's 48. She's chairman of the Maryland Democratic Party. They were married in 2008. Elijah Cummings was once heavily in debt, in part due to hefty child support payments to his first wife and to two other women with whom he had children. But his financial situation has improved considerably over the past decade. Rockymore runs two entities, and they're named here. The complaint says that the arrangement with those two entities may have been used to derive, quote, illegal private benefit. Goes into more detail, and it gets even worse. Global Policy Solutions, that's one of his wife's entities, received more than $6.2 million in grants between 2013 and 2016, according to tax records. Several of the nonprofit's group's financial backers, which include Google, J.P. Morgan, Prudential, have business interests before the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, ironically. So his wife has this entity that's receiving has received $6.2 million in grants from these big corporations, okay, since he's been chairman. Cummings has served as Democratic chairman of the committee since January and previously served as ranking member. The largest contributor to the nonprofit was the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which is the charitable arm of pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson. Stay with me. So Johnson & Johnson is the company. It has to go before Cummings' committee to be regulated. So Cummings has a tremendous power over them as the chairman and formerly as the ranking member. So their foundation was one of the largest contributors to his wife's entities. The foundation, which is the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which gave a total of $5.5 million to Rocky Moore's consulting firm and $5.2 million to her nonprofit, ceased supporting her groups in 2017. So Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the charitable arm of Johnson & Johnson, had given over, what, almost $11 million to Elijah Cummings' wife's entities. And then they stopped in 2017. What happened? Well, in recent months, Cummings has been a vocal opponent of Johnson & Johnson, targeting the company as part of the House Oversight Committee's probe of drug price inflation. Tom Anderson, who's the director of the National Legal and Policy Center's Governmental Integrity Project, which has been investigating the nonprofit arrangement and provided research to the Washington Examiner, said the potential for corruption is blank, is, quote, off the charts, end quote. He said Rocky Moore declined to let his organization view her nonprofit's most recent public financial records as required by the IRS. So just to conclude my part of this, the article is actually longer. It's really interesting. We should put this on our Facebook page. Top Democrat's wife may have gained illegal private benefit from his committee activities. Tom Anderson says this, When a powerful chairman of a committee of the House of Representatives has a wife that is bringing in money from entities with interests before his committee, and she's not providing the transparency mandated by the IRS, there's a serious problem. And you can see from the little bits I just reported to you that there is a very serious problem. All right, well, I promised you Steve Moore, and he's with us. Steve formerly wrote on economy and public policy for the Wall Street Journal, and now he's with the Heritage Foundation. He also is an advisor, a financial advisor to the president, and I've known Steve since back in Chicago days, and he's a national treasure, I think, when it comes to the economy. So, Steve, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, let me ask you a couple of questions, kind of unrelated. I actually started this segment with that story about the demand for President Trump's business records. Now, I know you're not a politician, Steve, but what do you think about the situation there? Do you think the House can actually get his past year's business records?
No, this is an outrageous invasion of his privacy. I worked on the campaign. The Democrats and Hillary Clinton made a big deal out of his tax returns. If the American people felt it was disqualifying that he did not release his tax returns, they could have voted against them. So this was all litigated. My point is, this was litigated during the campaign for presidency in 2016. And it would be an outrageous invasion of his personal privacy if somehow, for some reason, the Congress required him after the fact to release his tax returns and his personal business records. Now, the president has the right to do that on his own if he wants to, but I just think you can't pass a law based on things that have already happened. I mean, that is so contrary to the whole rule of law. In other words, you can't do something and then pass a law later that says what you did before was illegal, and then that's essentially what the Democrats are trying to do. And incidentally, Donald Trump has probably tens of thousands of pages of tax return. This is a very successful billionaire businessman. Can you imagine if he turned all that over to Congress? You would see two or three stories every single day for the next 5 years about his financial transactions.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and to infinity, actually. They could drag it out a lot.
Exactly. It would be insanity. There would be no way he could govern. And by the way, this is the whole purpose of this, is to paralyze his presidency so that he's unable to do anything. I mean, this is the derangement syndrome that we're seeing against Donald Trump. That is, it's not just politics. It's interfering with the business of our government and the functioning of our economy.
Yep, and no question about that. Steve, let me jump to China. China was in the news a lot last week. It's gone silent a little bit, but I'm sure it's not silent. And so let me just sort of catch people up a little bit. There was quite a war about a week ago, at least war of words, and certainly in the press they were covering it like crazy. And the president was threatening to raise tariffs. He did raise tariffs on billions of our sales overseas, and he threatened to do a remaining $325 billion. And now the Chinese then, of course, responded and said they were going to raise tariffs on $60 billion of U.S. goods starting June 1st. Okay, so that kind of gives the background. The stock market, went crazy and dropped, and then it came back. So where are we now? Right. What's going on now?
Well, first of all, let's start from the beginning. I mean, when Donald Trump ran for president back 4 years ago, one of his major themes was that it was going to get very tough with China. And that was very popular with voters. Look, China is no longer, at least the government there, is no longer friendly to the United States. It's an adversary. I believe we're in a kind of new Cold War with China when you look at what they're doing with respect to their spying on the United States. They're involved in hacking into our computer systems. They represent a cybersecurity threat to the United States. They are involved in cheating and stealing. They steal about $300 billion of our technology every year. In other words, this is not a friendly ally country. This is a country that is a threat to the United States, our economy, and to our security. And I don't know about you. I think Donald Trump is doing the right thing here. I mean, we can't go on with this abusive relationship we have with China right now. They are the second largest economy in the world, and they are involved in incredible unfair trade practices. And so Trump, thank goodness, is the first president in a long, long time. Where were the Bushes? Where was Clinton? Where was Obama when all this was happening? We have a president who's standing toe-to-toe with Beijing. This is a epic battle of our time, and I think Trump is going to win here. But look, now, I'm a free trade guy. I don't like tariffs. I don't like trade wars. But when you've got a country like China that is so out of control, I think he's doing the right thing. I think ultimately he's going to win here, but we have to have the American people and American businesses and workers stand behind him.
Absolutely, and it seems like they are so far. There's so many questions. I think when I think of this and I hear it in the headlines, I remember well, how could we forget that of all the promises that President Trump made when he was campaigning, I can't even imitate him on China, whatever he said. That was like the fifth word out of his mouth in every speech. This is a promise that he made and is keeping.
I couldn't say it better, and I was there on the campaign with him. And you're right, every other sentence he was denouncing China. And, the Bushes were kind of apologists for China. You've got, the Clinton did nothing about it. Obama did really nothing about China. Incidentally, I don't know if you saw the speech by Joe Biden a week or two ago where he was sucking up to China, and he's a China sympathizer. He said, China doesn't represent any threat to the United States. I mean, come on. Who do you think the Chinese government wants to win the next election, Donald Trump or Biden? I mean, they'd love to have Biden in because he'll just turn a blind eye to their bad behavior. Now, I don't like tariffs too much. This has hurt the U.S. economy. It will hurt China more. I've talked to Donald Trump many times about this. And
Somebody interrupt you. I'm sorry. The music is playing. Can you stay with me just a little longer?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we have to take a break. And when we come back, pick that sentence up. But I also want to get into the weeds a little bit more about who would be hurt in this trade war. There's a sort of a discrepancy about that. And what can Americans really expect, practically speaking, as they shop and do their lives, given the tensions with China? This is Sandy Rios. My guest is Steve Moore of the Heritage Foundation. Stay tuned. Come back right after this.
For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to the CDC and the Guttmacher Institute, the number one reason women choose abortion is they're not ready for a child. The number two reason, they can't afford a baby. Number three, they don't want any more children. Number four, they don't want to be a single mother. Number five, not mature enough to raise a child. Number six, a baby would interfere with their education or career. Those reasons represent 95% of all abortions. Risk to the mother's physical health represent less than 4% of all abortions. And conception resulting from rape and incest represent less than 1% of all abortions. Abortion is used as birth control.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Does God exist? Is the Bible true? Does truth exist?
When people say there is no truth, I simply ask them this question. Is that true?
Join us this weekend for Cross Examined with Frank Turek, author of the bestseller, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist.
I actually think it takes more faith not to believe in the truthfulness of the Bible than it does to believe in the Bible.
Cross Examined with apologist Frank Turek, Saturday morning at 9 Central and Sunday afternoon at 4 Central on American Family Radio.
Love sings.
You know, ignorance is not bliss. We must know our enemy's strategies.
Like a good song, marriage requires the right balance of melody, harmony, and rhythm. Longtime friends of the American Family Association, Barbie and Terry Franklin, share stories and music in their new DVD set, Love Sings, The Artistry of Marriage.
It'll change your marriage like this.
Produced by American Family Studios, Love Sings is now available at afastore.net.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday.
Tell Congress to protect babies who survive abortion by supporting the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Act. Call your representative today at 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. A baby who survives abortion should have a chance to live.
Happy birthday to you.
A message from AFA Action.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. History is replete with what ifs. What might have happened if different decisions were taken at critical junctures? For example, what if U.S. forces were precipitously removed from Germany, Japan, or South Korea after they helped end hostilities in each country? We know what happened when President Obama removed them from Iraq in 2011. Candidate Donald Trump rightly castigated him for creating conditions that contributed to the rise of ISIS, its predations and territorial conquests in that country and neighboring Syria. As president, Mr. Trump was tempted to do the same thing after ISIS's so-called caliphate was destroyed. He ultimately and wisely decided to keep a small American military presence in Syria. Thankfully, as a result, we can indulge in speculation about what would have happened if he hadn't done so, rather than deal with the likely terrible consequences if he had. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
There's a lot of pages about, is this a matter? Who decided to essentially clear Hillary Clinton in those first press conferences? As you can tell, as you're suggesting, Laura, neither Comey nor Loretta Lynch now wants to take responsibility for essentially clearing Hillary Clinton. But one of them did because they're both in charge, the FBI and the Justice Department, they're in charge, and they shouldn't, I don't think, have ever gone public and cleared her in the first place. But they went and took that momentous step and started this whole chain reaction of events.
That's amazing. That's John Yoo, former Deputy Attorney General, on Laura Ingraham last night. And that was a development that happened in the last 24 hours. Now it looks as though James Comey and Loretta Lynch are at odds. over the issue of, again, as John sort of described it, not bringing criminal charges against Hillary Clinton. And of course, yesterday's story was that James Comey, well, earlier than yesterday, James Comey and John Brennan are now at each other's throats, blaming each other for including the dossier in the intelligence briefing. There's more to say about that, but those two stories are really important. I wanted to make sure that I got them in. My guest is Steve Moore. And Steve, of course, is an economist, an advisor to the president. And we are talking about the implications of this trade war, I guess you would. It's not an overstatement. With Red China. I haven't heard said that in a long time. But Steve, you were saying before we took that break, you were explaining some of your conversations with the president on this.
Well, first of all, Sandy, thank you for calling them Red China, because, you know, they are Red China again. I mean, yes. You know, one of the things that's so discouraging about what's happened in China is that, you know, after Mao died, and Mao was one of the greatest butchers and villains of all time. He killed 200 million of his own people. You know, China moved towards a more free enterprise, free market, economy. And we nurtured them along for, you know, a good part of 20 years. And it was a successful thing. China became a middle-class country and moved out of, extreme poverty. And then what happened is about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, they started to move back towards totalitarian, communist types of central planning policies. So you're right. We should call them communist China, because they've returned to those kinds of policies, and they've become an economic and a national security threat to the United States. And Donald Trump, as I was saying earlier, is to be commended for calling them out on this. And, you know, Donald Trump understands that there's, you know, real risks here. I mean, this is. It would be great if China behaved itself and we didn't have to have a trade war with China. But I think he's so frustrated that they have not changed their behavior that he is taking on this crusade. And I think it's the right one. I think the American people have to stand behind him. Will this cost consumers money? Yeah. You know, tariffs are taxes. So it means when you go to Walmart, you may have to pay a little bit more. But I think I view this, and I think Donald Trump does as well, is short-term pain for long-term gain.
Well, I agree with you. In fact, I said to my listeners, look, we've bought junk for so long, for so cheap, whether it's clothes or, you know, so many things in our closets, things that we're not going to die if we don't have them. But you go to Canada, for instance, Steve, and their goods are expensive. You go out to eat, it's expensive. They have protections to use Canadian goods, and we don't have those. And of course, that means the consumer gets to buy way too much more than we need. But it hurts our economy, hurts jobs, hurts our sovereignty.
That's right. I mean, look, the American economy, by the way, first of all, let's step back a minute. I mean, what Donald Trump has done to the American economy is one of the most spectacular things I've ever seen. I just saw the president last week, and I was just joking, you know, that you've got to stop creating so many jobs, Mr. President. We don't have enough workers for all the jobs you're creating. I mean, this is the best economy for an American worker in 50 years. So, this is a president who knows what he's doing when it comes to rebuilding our economy from, you know, the last two Bush years, which were a disaster, and, of course, Obama's years, which were equally bad. And so Trump is a CEO. He's a businessman. He knows how to rebuild an economy. And this tariff is something we want to get behind us. I mean, ultimately, what I hope happens is China will stand down. There's nothing that Donald Trump is asking of the Chinese that is unreasonable. These are very reasonable demands he's making, and I don't know what else he could do to get them to behave.
You know, one thing is that's not clear. I've asked the question, I'm not clear about this. Who has the most to lose? I know we are absolutely intertwined, joined at the hip. They have a ton of our debt. The trade equity is not the same. We take in billions of their goods, and we don't
take—we
don't send much of ours there. But who has the most to lose in this?
Who? So say again.
Who? Which power, America or China, has the most to lose if they lose or win this war?
They have. I mean, I'm glad you asked that question, Sandy, because the answer to that is very easy. Sometimes the media doesn't portray it as such, but there is no way China can grow without access to America's, you know, multi-trillion-dollar consumer market. And that's how they've grown for 20 years. So, you know, Donald Trump used to tell me, if we can't trade with China, we sneeze. If they can't trade with us, they catch pneumonia. So we have leverage here, and that's what Trump is using, our leverage over China to get them to behave. Now, here's what worries me, Sandy. We you saw I mentioned earlier what Joe Biden said a week or two ago, saying he wants to go easy on China. What worries me is the Chinese government in Beijing. And by the way, I'm talking about the Chinese government. I'm not talking about the Chinese people. The Chinese people are people who've been mistreated by their own government here. But I believe that the Chinese may wait out Trump and hope that Joe Biden is elected president, because Joe Biden will just roll over to China.
Yes. Well, what was it, the story that broke at the end of last week, that a State Department, I think a current State Department official, was making overtures to China and suggesting exactly that they wait until Trump, Trump is not going to get win again, just wait him out and don't make any kind of a deal, just hold out. What do you know about that story, Steve, and who that might have been?
How unpatriotic is that? You know, people used to say, oh, you know, October surprise, and, you know, this presidential candidate was trying to undermine America's, you know, policies. Well, that's what I think the Democrats are doing here. They're saying, like, you know, get rid of Trump, and we'll you know, be much friendlier towards you. And in the end, look, I think that I think Trump is going to get a victory here. I do think, Sandy, there's going to get a deal done that's done before the end of this year, and it will be there's not a level playing field, by the way. You made a great point that it's not a level playing field. Our China posed tariffs on the United States that are three times higher than ours on them. How is that free trade?
Well, also the stealing, which you alluded to, but we, you know, the stealing, and the effect of the Clinton administration gave them our technological secrets and forced companies to do the same. I have a good friend that worked for IBM, and she just talked about how she traveled to China a lot. She was an executive, and she was asked to, you know, give them some of the top secrets of IBM. She was instructed to do that, and she talked about how that bothered her. It wasn't illegal, but it just seemed wrong to her. They've been operating with a huge advantage, copying everything that we make, including, you know, military hardware to all kinds of things, and now we are reaping.
By the way, you're right, and then the question is why, and the answer is because we've not had a leader in the United States who stood up to them. I mean, look, if you keep backing down to a bully, the bully isn't going to go away, right? And that's why I think the American people should really be applauding what Trump is doing. Now, is it going to cost us a little bit more when we go to Walmart and buy things? Yes. You know, you made the point, which I think was an excellent one, Cindy. If you go to the store, look, and if it has a Chinese label on it, don't buy it. You know, buy American. I think it's almost your patriotic duty to. This is a struggle that we cannot lose. This is a battle. Can you imagine what happens if we capitulate now to China? How bad it will be?
No, I can't. I can't imagine it. And I think that I think you're right about that. You know, I want to read you a comment made by another commentator. He's actually a national security expert. I don't know his real name, to be honest. I know his moniker. But this is what he said. President Trump has walked Chairman Xi into a trap. There is only downside for China in the current dynamic. In an effort to avoid the downside, China will bleed cash to retain their economic position. However, this can only last so long. Do you think that's an accurate analysis?
Yeah, look, I think Trump's going to get a victory here. I really do. I think China can't. This will throw their economy into recession if they don't start making real concessions to Trump. And I guarantee you what this, Sandy, having known Donald Trump now for 4 years and worked with him, this is a guy who does not back down. I think the Chinese made a terrible miscalculation about the resolve of this president and the resolve of the American people, don't you? I think the American people are behind Trump in this.
Yeah, I do too. I think that, well, look, we're so sick of politicians who have no spine. I mean, the polls show that that's just, Americans are fighters, really. I know we've been lulled into our, you know, economic success, and we've gone overripe in our prosperity. That's true, but still in our DNA is fight. And I think we appreciate a good fighter, somebody who stands for what's right. And I do think that's why he's getting the support that he is. Let me ask you a couple of...
More than Donald Trump, by the way.
Pardon?
Nobody fights harder and better and more strategically than Donald Trump. I always tell people, if you want to understand Donald Trump, you have to read his book, The Art of the Deal. This is the guy who knows how to negotiate. I think the Chinese have bit off a little bit more than they can chew here.
Yeah. There's no question that he is really, this sounds going to sound like an overstatement, but truly, I think when we look back on this time, he is a remarkable person. His flaws are the things that people zero in on and mistake that for the essence of the man. And the man himself has a will, as you said, a will of iron, and has tremendous insight and has accomplished absolutely phenomenal things in the face of incredible opposition, almost within his party, without his party, the press, everything. I don't know how, it really is a story for the ages. There's no question about it. But I think that that doesn't, I think that for myself, the thing I have to remember is that the story's not over yet and there's still danger. I think of the conflict with Iran, right, Neil, now, and this deal with China, which is not a done deal. All the things that could really finally be that final blow. And so, personally, Steve, I pray for him all the time because I think only God, and I think God has had a hand in sort of strengthening him, and I think only God can sustain him through the rest of this. I want to ask you just a plain old question that's, you know, we're $22 trillion dollars in debt. I don't need to tell you that, but it's true. Can a good economy alone pull us out of that? How do we shake loose of that, Steve?
Well, certainly you need a good economy. You know, last year, I'll give you an example. I mean, the economy did so well that last year, you may not be aware of this because the media doesn't report it, the United States government and the Treasury Department collected more tax revenues than any other year in American history. Now, think about that. Even with the Trump tax cut, the economy did so well, we collected more taxes than ever before. Now, why am I telling you that? Because, Sandy, we have a spending problem. We don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. I listen to the Democrats. They keep saying, oh, we got to raise this tax and that tax and that tax. Why don't they cut some government spending? By the way, I'm going to blame both parties here. I think neither party once got serious about cutting government spending, and we need to do it. There's so much waste in Washington. I live in the swamp. It is outrageous. I think 30 cents out of every dollar is wasted in Washington.
Oh, I wonder if that's not low. I kind of wonder if it's not more than that. Seriously. And, you know, Steve, just a practical matter.
You're
my husband and I were discussing. Well, that's probably true. But, you know, the reports,
two
weeks?
You know, the Trump plan says, let's just cut a penny out of every dollar each year. And, oh, my gosh, the Washington goes crazy. We can't cut a penny out of every dollar we spend. I mean, come on, every family does that. Every business does that. And if you do that for 5 years, you know, within 6 or 7 years, you can have a balanced budget. How hard is that? Just instead of spending a dollar, send 99 cents, and then the next year, send 98 cents. I mean, it's so logical. Balancing the budget is not that difficult with a little fiscal discipline.
Yes, but if you kind of examine the economic knowledge and the fiscal discipline of the members of Congress, the Senate and the House, it's pretty dreadful. Besides Dave Brad, who's no longer there, I don't even think there are any economists, Steve. I do, too.
Losing Dave Brad was a real loss. But I think you're exactly right that these, you know, by the way, the Democrats, if you look at their whole agenda, the Green New Deal, the Medicare for All, the guaranteed national income, reparation payments for slavery, you know, going on and on and on and on. I calculated that over the next 20 years, that would cost the United States taxpayers $100 trillion, not $100 billion, $100 trillion.
Oh, Elijah Cummings will pay for that. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly.
A little inside joke. Okay. Hey, Steve Moore, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and have a great day there in D.C., and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Sandy. Have a great
day. All right, you too. All right, Sandy Rios. Well, there you go. There's the news, at least part of it for today. So go forth and do the right thing and honor God in the process. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.